Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The throw, the punch is away. He floats one wide open, and there he goes. Tagged down for a Texan touchdown.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Bullpen. As always, I'm James Roy, and with me is Tom Chaparia. Tom, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I just got done bowling in my bowling league, and like I was telling James before we got started, I've been so inconsistent, you know, kind of like the Texans. You know, they look really good one day, you feel like they can beat anybody, then they just barely do enough. We're definitely going to get into a lot of that because I'm sure a lot of people are so very frustrated with this football game. But the title of our last show was just Win, Baby, and that's exactly what happened.
Exactly, and I think a lot of people maybe are looking to mention it. We'll dive right into it. We'll talk about the Raiders game. Not how you wanted it to go, not how you thought it should go. I think it's a testament to the Texans' skill level that they were able to do what they did with the players they had missing. I think that Azeez Al-Shaair's absence was probably felt a lot more than some people thought it would be. It's surprising that some people would discount his absence just, you know, by itself. But with the Raiders being the opponent, it kind of makes sense. But when you look at what the Raiders have done this season, the win, it feels like less, but I mean, it's a win. I think this is a time where Tom and I will both agree a win is a win. I think I've kind of reached a point in this season where it's really just a win is a win. There's not really any point in debating style points. This Texans team has grinded out a 7-game win streak, moved to a point where they're very much in the playoffs and in control of their destiny there, and could very well move even higher than that. But how do you feel coming out of a Raiders game that maybe didn't go the way a lot of people expected it to?
So I'm not going to lie. I was just as frustrated as everybody else. You know, you want to see this team look the part. I think for Texan fans that were Oilers fans, you know, all of that, like, you feel this like inferiority complex where it's kind of like, okay, when is my team ever going to look like the dominant team that you see in, you know, Kansas City or Detroit or wherever, right? And you feel like you have this like we've arrived moment. They go and beat these good teams, and it's like, oh, they got to handle business against bad teams. But the bottom line, and what I think a lot of people need to understand, is like, to win 7 in a row, you're going to have some games where you don't have your best and you find a way to win. Like, there's so many teams in this league that have ugly losses or disappointing losses on their ledger where they're like, what happened here? And how did we get there? And you know, the Texans could have had that with Las Vegas, and they didn't. And that should be like the thing. People are like down on this team, like they can't do something in the playoffs now because of this game, and just want to discredit all that they did to get here. I mean, we're definitely going to go into why they didn't look good. I mean, there's definitely some people that, you know, I think they held themselves accountable. I think, you know, they didn't play well. And when you have major key players not playing well, and you have guys on the Raiders who, I mean, they balled out, you're going to have these games that are closer than they should be. And for me, I'm just glad they got the win. I understand the frustrations, but at the same time, if you look at everything in context with the injuries and things of that nature, there were people on Twitter who I won't name names, but they were saying that the Texans were unserious because they sat people against the Raiders, and this was a trap game, and they were gonna lose because they weren't taking it seriously and should have blown this team out. I'm like, it's December. Like, their bye week was week six. Like, you got to take care of your people. You have to think long game. Like, to be upset because they didn't blow out the Las Vegas Raiders because they're one of the worst teams in football is just dumb. And that's how I feel about it. Like, yeah, I'm disappointed, but at the same time, I get it.
Yeah, and when I look at the Raiders, I've kind of alluded to it. Like, and I think Jason Braddock did a really good job of illustrating this. The Raiders, this is the same Raiders team that beat the Patriots. People talk about the Patriots having a weak strength of schedule, but they're still a 12-3 team that lost. One of their losses is to the Raiders. The Jaguars needed, you know, a 1-point win in overtime, where I think the Raiders missed a 2-point conversion. That was the difference in that game. And then looking at the Broncos, they played them twice. Both games were one-score games. One game, a 7-point game where Kenny Pickett came in and played quarterback for the Raiders. So I'm just like, at face value, it felt like bad. Honestly, I'm more frustrated. And Brandon Halam, shout out to him, has brought it up. Blake Fisher will be confused when he only sees four other linemen. Blake Fisher is going to have to step up. But the most frustrating thing to me is that we lost two tackles in this game, which to me is compromising in a way. I've spoken to the fact that I like the way that this O-line can retool and reconfigure with what they have and the depth that they've discovered by way of having to play it due to injuries. So I feel good about left guard with Jarrett Patterson coming in and Titus Howard moving back to tackle. He played at a Pro Bowl level at that position. There's no reason not to be happy that he's at that position. The problem becomes, you know, I think they're going to put Titus Howard at right tackle. So Blake Fisher is going to come in and play left tackle for the Texans. One, it takes away the jumbo set. There's some people I know, notably Texans Jacob, has been very adamantly like, why do we keep running a jumbo set? Some people don't like it, but it has been a core part of this offense, an offense that's wanted to establish an identity in the run game. And when you remove the ability to run that jumbo set, you're left with the question of, you know, can you even run the ball? So, I mean, that's more frustrating to me than the way that this Raiders game went down. I think, like I said, it highlighted the need for Azeez Al-Shaair. I agree with you. You can't just force these players to play just because you need them. But I mean, missing Woody Marks was a notable absence on offense. There was plenty of players that could have helped this team out that were injured, but you hadn't had a bye week since week six. When do they sit? Woody Marks has been chugging along through injuries. At face value, what game do you sit Woody Marks, if not this one? This is the one where you sit him. I mean, it makes sense to me, especially with Jo'Ar Jordan coming off the game that he had. It just kind of, the stars aligned there for me. But looking ahead, this Texans team is entering a two-game stretch where playoffs are going to be on the line. They're really high odds to make it, but they still have to step up and win. How do you feel about how this game has impacted, you know, the Raiders game has impacted the Texans moving forward with these injuries and with the viewpoint of this team from that game?
I guess it really depends on, you know, the severity, right? So to get into what the injuries were, Ariante Arceri broke his hand. He had a surgery, put, I think, a metal plate or something in to help with that. They're saying that it's not a season-ending injury. So when Trent Brown's tricky because he was able to walk off under his own power, but it's a knee thing. That's a big man to have knee problems. But to speak to Texans going to the Bowl 26 on the X chat, I'm glad it's happening now. You know, like if you're going to have these things happen. The Texans have been incredibly fortunate with injuries. They've had guys that have powered through a lot. You know, Derek Stingley Jr. is not right. I mean, he's missed tons of practice days. Kamari Lassiter is not right. He's missed tons of practice days. The guys show up on Sunday and they play and you know, make plays at that. So it's the end of the season. Nobody's 100%. And if you are going to have, you know, injuries where guys get nicked up, at least there's time for them to come back. And you really hope that going into this last two game stretch, they can figure out, you know, guys that can be, you know, role players, guys that can come in now and then maybe they can rotate, you know, later on, because it's really next man up. I hate to be as cliche as D'Amico Ryans always is, but that's exactly what it is right now.
You know what that mentality always makes me think of? And I can never find this video anywhere. I've searched all over YouTube and the internet. If anyone has it, let me know. But I remember shortly after the Texans beat the Bengals and clinched the playoffs back in 2011, there was a video on CBS, like one of their hype reels, where it was like Arian Foster, you know, Brian Cushing, like all the notable Texans, Andre Johnson, were all like, why not him? You know, he's not our backup quarterback. He's the starter now. Talking about TJ Yates. And it just always makes me think of that reel where I'm like thinking like, big names on the team are just like, why can't it be that Blake Fisher is a really good tackle? Like, and it's like, well, obviously it can't be because we've got a lot of evidence against it. But I think a lot of people forget this. There was a whole season, you know, Blake Fisher's rookie season, where he played a significant amount and was very serviceable. I would hope he hasn't regressed since then. In short spurts, it's tough to see and have enough information to say this guy is good. But I think that if we get to see more of him, that maybe that opinion will change. I'd like to say thank you to everyone who's commenting. That's obviously each week I like to say the purpose of being live is that you guys, if you have something to say, put it in the chat so we can talk about it. A lively chat leads to a lively conversation. So thank you to Brandon and Texans Going to the Bowl 26, like that name, for dropping your comments. But Brandon, I don't like this comment at all. I thank you for putting it, but I hate it. It's like, should we bite the bullet and sign Laken Tomlinson back to the team and put him in there? Like, I mean, what are we doing here? Jarrett Patterson has shown really well over really long stretches. It's been baffling to me. I've been one of the biggest champions of Jarrett Patterson. I thought he legitimately should have been the Texans center going into the season. Obviously, they picked up Jake Andrews, went in that direction. He's an interior offensive lineman who is definitely the best depth that this team has. So if Titus Howard's going back out to tackle, Jarrett Patterson should be playing guard. And we saw as much in the game. When these injuries happened, Jarrett Patterson stepped in. And so if Juice Scruggs has to play another down at guard for this team, I'm going to go back to this comment from Texans Going to the Bowl. My concern is the offense not holding up when the playoffs come around. And that is, I think, the perfect response to not seeing the best offensive line from this team that it has to offer. And playing Juice Scruggs, I feel like, is not offering the best that this team has at this point. But Tom, what are your thoughts on that comment? I'll bring you back up.
I mean, I saw that Brandon cleared it up, making Juice the sixth lineman in the jumbo package. That might be something where he excels.
There we go. Sorry, I didn't mean to be so blatantly ignorant of.
He's like, I hate this guy. Well, he didn't say that until you hit comment. It. Yeah. But I mean, that.
I am so dumb for going on that tangent, but I do mean it. I just, you didn't mean what I thought you meant. So yeah. I'm sorry.
I think that, you know, the jumbo lineup works for them. And it seems like it also provides CJ a little bit more comfort. Like, there was a time, and rightfully so, where he had happy feet crazy. Like, it was just, he never looked calm in the pocket. Lately, I think there's been stretches where CJ looks incredibly calm in the pocket. He's willing to step up. He's willing to, you know, make plays through the pocket as opposed to, like, running back and kind of running out of the hula hoop, as people say, the pocket of protection. So it's been good. And if they've got to find another offensive lineman off the street or whatever to keep using the jumbo lineup as opposed to running a tight end out there, which If you watched the Raiders game, they tried to do that where they had Stover and who am I missing? Schultz. They had them together, and Max Crosby just sliced that incredibly, you know, easily. Like there was no resistance. So I don't know
as much of a banner year as Schultz is having, expecting him to do that kind of blocking is.
Yeah.
What was wrong with the offense before this season? Like, in my opinion, so one of the issues, I should say. But we got a comment on the Instagram chat. Did we give up too easily on Pierce? I think you, as the Damian Pierce fan club president, are the perfect person to answer that question. So I'll leave it to you.
I don't know. It remains to be seen. Obviously, Pierce has to catch on with the Chiefs and ball out. I think the talent was there. I don't think there's anybody questioning the talent or the heart or the determination. I just think systematically, Damian Pierce was probably better suited for a different style. And, you know, being able to make the one cut and go just never really worked for him. And you're seeing it with guys like Woody Marks and Jawar Jordan, when you can be decisive in that cut and just burst through the hole, you can go get big chunks of yardage. And I think that that was just a problem. Pierce would get in the hole and then not know where to go. And then he just put his head down and run into somebody. And while he would get a couple yards, and occasionally he would get, you know, a 4 or 5 yard, you know, burst, it just didn't, it wasn't sustainable. So there's a lot of guys that they've got that I think we might see. British Brooks is a special teams ace, but I think there was a time where people thought he might look really good in the system. He played well in the preseason. There's a couple other names that escape me right now because I'm terrible with names. But the Texans don't have an issue finding running backs for their system, and I think that's why that made Damian Pierce expendable.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's tough to say that you gave up on someone too easily when they're in the last year of their rookie contract and have had ample opportunities to show up for the team. I agree with Tom. I mean, it's always a stylistic thing. I think the offense was very conducive to what Damian Pierce does when he got here. And then right the next season, they just absolutely changed everything around and started running an offense that doesn't really suit what Damian Pierce is. I'm not sure that the Texans draft him if the offensive staff that's in charge now or, you know, Bobby Slowick's staff was in charge when he became available in the draft. So it's just tough to say. I mean, I don't think that it was too early or too easily. And Brandon, I think, brings up a good point. He ended the Chiefs dynasty. There's a number of things that have ended the Chiefs dynasty, but no, I don't think Damian Pierce was responsible for that. I think that the Chiefs definitely needed him a few weeks earlier in the season. That probably could have been the juice they needed to try and get something going, but I'm not sure that he is the reason that dynasty ended. See, even at practice in the offseason, we were seeing Jawar get more reps than Pierce. I mean, I like Jawar Jordan was drafted by this regime. This, you know, obviously Nick Caserio spans both regimes, but this offensive staff was in the draft room and said, Jawar Jordan looks like a guy we'd like to have on our team. And even though he's been released and brought back on practice squad and everything, Jawar Jordan, I always felt like, was a good option for this team when they would need him. So when Pierce was let go and things started going south, it made sense to bring Jawar Jordan up, and he made the most of his opportunity. So I'm not alone in thinking that Jawar Jordan has shown something that makes his being on the Texans make sense. So looking to the Chargers game, the Texans are coming out to LA. It's going to be an interesting environment because remember they crushed the Chargers at home in the playoffs. This is a whole different ball game, I think, because a different environment, you know, on the road. How do you feel about those factors changing and how it affects the Texans going into this game?
I mean, I'd feel really good if they were whole. That the who's going to play, who's not going to play, that's going to be a big thing. What they can do to shore up the offensive line. The Chargers have offensive line issues too. A lot of teams around this league that we were talking about the Chiefs dynasty. The Chiefs dynasty ended when their offensive line ended and they lost both tackles. And right now I think the Chargers are down a couple tackles too. So, I mean, trying to block some of these premier guys, like Brandon was talking about with OA and Thule, like, you know, the Texans are going to be able to have that same advantage when you're talking about Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. Chasing down Justin Herbert, who, by the way, is not 100% either. So I feel pretty confident that the Texans can go get it done. They're going to have to play better ball. One thing that we talked about that I'll go back to Texans going to the Bulls comment, you know, where I'm glad it's happening now. CJ had a bad game against Vegas. No ifs, ands, or buts. He was missing throws that could have extended drives. He was missing easy throws to keep him on schedule. And CJ will tell you he did not play his best ball. So that happening then, which I'm glad it happened in that game, I expect a huge bounce back game from CJ. I think he's going to go out to prove that he's every bit, you know, the premier quarterback that we think he is. And in LA, I think he's an LA guy, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he graduated high school in Rancho Cucamonga, which is it's inland, it's in Riverside County, but it's about an hour or two out of LA. And generally speaking, people from that area are more prone to be into LA sports.
So I think he's going to have family. I think he's going to have friends at the game. I think you're going to get prime CJ Stroud this weekend. So I'm looking forward. And it's funny that Brandon says that, because I don't believe, if he's talking about Jaden Higgins, I don't believe he's incapable of hitting him. I think there's a lot of mouths to feed, and Higgins is just down in the pecking order. Right now, Schultz is probably, you know, 1B and Nico's 1A. And you've seen Kirk get a lot of attention now. So it's like you add Stover into that a little bit. It's what do you do? There's a lot of mouths to feed. So I understand why Higgins isn't getting the ball. I wish he was, though.
I mean, Higgins in his own right is a great wide receiver. I don't fault CJ for not being able. I think that what we can look at is when Davis Mills took over for a stretch, he was distributing the ball and was able to find Higgins. And so some people are looking back at that and saying, oh, well, if Mills could do it and Stroud can't, that's like a knock on Stroud. But it's a chemistry thing, I think. I think there's more to it than just CJ Stroud can't hit Jaden Higgins. And also I think that maybe this offense looks very different. There's a different play calling cadence and all that, and different reads to go through when you have one quarterback versus the other. So, I think CJ has been able to hit Higgins. And I think that one of the keys to this offense doing what it needs to do is that happening more often. But I don't think it's necessarily that he's incapable of hitting Higgins. But let's see. It's weird that the throws are over his head, though, because Higgins is quite literally a giant. He's the same size as Nico Collins. He's basically a Nico Collins clone. And CJ has that chemistry with Collins. So I guess it is an interesting dilemma, to say the least.
Well, CJ missed Nico, too. Like, CJ just had a bad, bad game, in my opinion, where it was like he was unsure of things. Maybe he was trying. I've heard people say that there's a great emphasis on him protecting the football, and he's done that. But it's one of those things where if you take away his aggressiveness and go, look, I don't want you throwing the ball into anything dicey. I don't want you taking any unnecessary risk, because we have this elite defense. And if you don't just turn the ball over, we're probably going to be in every game. That's probably why CJ's like, okay, if I miss a little high, if I miss a little far, I'm only putting it where my guy can get it, even though they couldn't. That's the mentality he's taking, whether it's right or wrong. And now we're questioning whether or not he can do it.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Yeah, and I agree with you that it is, like, if you look at any issue with the Texans, so obviously D'Amico has taken a step back from play calling with the defense. He's focused on the whole team, and his mentality, I can imagine, just based off the way that he's made a lot of decisions, you know, game-wise, is as long as the offense doesn't mess it up, the defense can save it. And so we've seen that play out, and it's been, you know, early in the season, it was kind of felt like, it wasn't working, but recently they've been able to do that with a lot of success. And so watching that happen, I think one of the things is that a lot of times when CJ is set up to throw to Higgins, it's like on the sideline, very pinpoint throws. And so he usually hits those pretty regularly, but for some reason when he's targeting Higgins, they're just not hitting. And maybe that has something to do with it, that he's being forced into this conservative box. So he's like, only like those are balls where you're putting them where the defender can't reach it, and you're really asking the receiver to do a lot there to reach it. It's just, it's not the receiver's fault, and it's a very hard ball to throw. It has to be in a very specific place. So maybe that's part of it, but I can't say for sure. It's something I definitely should probably pay more attention to, honestly, but I can't deny it, right, Brandon? Because I mean, to say that I haven't noticed it would be to say I haven't watched Texans football this year. It is certainly something that is happening, but I can't give proper cause for it. But oh well. Looking at this Chargers matchup, so the Texans enter this matchup with a 99% chance of making the playoffs. There's some things that need to shake one way or another. But I don't want to say it's essentially locked. I titled the episode "Charging into the Playoffs," but they are very much in the control of their own destiny. Now there are some other things that can happen. The Texans are literally in a position to get any seed in the playoffs. They are able to at this point, from 1-7, land in the playoffs. They can get the one seed. It's a stretch. It's like a 0.2% thing. And people are like, well, how can they get that? They don't hold this, that, and the other tiebreaker here or there. Cause the tiebreaker there, I think is conference record, but, say stampeding into it. I said charging into it cause they're playing the Chargers this week, Brandon. Come on. Just like I said, just win baby last week because they're playing the Raiders. I'm trying to hint at who we're playing next, man. But I do like that one. Might use that one. Maybe we'll say swarming into the playoffs. Maybe. I don't know. But looking at it, what do you think is the ideal outcome for the Texans? So obviously, you know, we'll remove the one seed. That seems like a stretch. But like, what is your ideal opponent and seeding for the Texans based off what is possible past that?
It's funny that you bring that up because it was on Sports Talk Radio this morning. They tried to like analyze it, but they took the stance that the Texans are basically a wildcard team. They're like, they don't see a scenario where the Jags lose a game.
Did you see what the Colts did to the 49ers? They didn't win, but did you see the way they played?
Preaching to the choir. I'm just speaking on what they said. You're preaching to the choir. I think Phillip Rivers has a little bit of juice. I think that team, it helped that they were in their own building, but I think that team is starting to find a little something. They could absolutely be Jacksonville. I firmly believe that. However, you've seen Jacksonville. You've seen what they've been able to do. You saw how they went into Denver and got a win. That's a very impressive win. I'm not just going to sit here and, because I want them to lose, go, oh, yeah, the Colts are going to do that. I mean, I'm rooting for it. I got to give if I'm a betting man, I'm not betting on it.
Do you think right now, because the Broncos have a pretty weak strength of schedule, it's like second weakest in the entire NFL, maybe the weakest. Do you think right now with Phillip Rivers that the Colts are comparable to the Broncos? Do you think that they pose a similar threat to the Jaguars? Or do you still, much like a lot of people saw Daniel Jones go down and they said the Colts are no longer a threat to anyone. Do you think that the Colts are at that level of where the Broncos are right now? Or do you think that maybe they're significantly less?
I think they're less just because Phillip Rivers can't throw the ball further than 20 yards. like that, I at some point you're going, look, you're not going over my head. So everything's in front of me. Now they've done a very good job. Shane Steichen's done a very good job of scheming it up to where they could go out and make plays in front of defenses when you know that guy can't throw the ball far, even though they tried it. They tried to air it out. It's just not going to do it. Bo Nix is a young athletic dude. I think if you're putting them on paper and you're grading them out, the defense is probably going to be Denver. The quarterback's going to be Denver. The wide receivers, probably Denver. Indy's got the running back, no question. But if you start stacking this thing up, Denver's the better team. And for Jacksonville to go into their building and thoroughly beat them, you have to say, okay, there's no reason for them to lose either of the next two games. I mean, they play Tennessee, I think the last game of the season. That's a division matchup. There's no reason to think that they can't go in there. Cam Ward trying to prove that, you know, he's the guy for next season and ball out and win. It's just not likely.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if we look at it's the divisional aspect to me makes it close, but I agree with you. The biggest knock is that Rivers looked like if he had Anthony Richardson's arm strength, Indy would be looking a lot better than they do right now. But as it stands, he looks like he's really straining to get the ball anywhere. And that's the biggest knock on him. Someone pointed out, I think it was Icy Vert, one of those big NFL content creator accounts. So they're like, where did this go? This like pre-snap where like Phillip Rivers is like, and maybe it was just Monday Night Football prime time and you could just hear more of it, but like he was calling out like a full thesis to the offense. And I looked, the play clock's at like 13 seconds. He's like, whoa, whoa, Omaha, blah, blah. Like just very much like in the vein of like a Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. I think someone pointed out Aaron Rodgers does that still to this day. But do you think that that's something that has gone away because of the NFL's inability to develop quarterbacks? Do you think that we're just not hearing it? Or like, why is there less motion going on pre-snap for quarterbacks?
I think this is more about Shane Steichen and Phillip Rivers have been together or some version of that for a long time. Like Shane Steichen was the OC for, you know, the Chargers when Phillip Rivers played there. So like, and then from what I heard, Phillip Rivers is teaching this offense to his kids on his high school football team. So for him to go in and sound like this and look like this and be up to the line quick, it's because he's got, what, a decade in this offense? Like, there's not a play call that he's going to hear that he's not, you know, confident and dissecting and putting out there. And you just see it. I'm jealous of how fast they get to the line and how much Phillip Rivers is able to go and inspect the defense and go, okay, this is where I think I can win. CJ's got to get to that point. Because for me, when you watch some of the better quarterbacks, Brock Purdy was doing a pretty good job of it too. Up to the line fast, everybody's set, being able to go, okay, this is where the pressure's coming from. Let me shift my protections and go in and making plays. Phillip Rivers, for the most part, has stayed really clean. And you would think for a dude that's absolutely a statue in the truest form of the word, would be sacked by somebody. Like he's not running. There was a play where he tried to run out of the pocket to throw the football, and it looked like, you know, the internet wasn't working good because it was just like his feet were doing this, but he wasn't going nowhere. Like, you know, whatever streaming service wasn't operating correctly because he wasn't moving. And it's just because he's that old. But, you know, that's the perks of being in a system, understanding every play call, understanding exactly what you're trying to do, and having that speed. Because as we talked about on one of our previous shows, you get like 15 seconds with the offensive coordinator to get a play in and this and that, and then you got to go with it. So to be able to go that fast is an advantage for them for sure.
100%. And then that's the reason I asked it, is that like the Texans offense, I think one of the biggest drawbacks of switching offensive coordinators and getting that rhythm going is that I don't think the Texans have quite gotten to that level yet in terms of how they function and their rhythm and cadence, and you know, seeing CJ at the line calling that out. You do see CJ making calls at the line. It just kind of feels like it's always under this pressure of like 5, 4, 3, 2, and and you know, get the playoff or whatever. So I mean, that's the main reason I brought it up. But look to speak to the discussion about playoff seeding. I think that, in my opinion, the best place for the Texans to be is probably at the 5 seed, and it's very feasible. The Bills play the Eagles. So if the Bills take a loss, if they don't lose to the Eagles, it's not likely they lose this season, the rest of the season. But if the Bills take a loss and the Texans win out, they would move up to the 5 seed because they play the Chargers. And I, you know, playing the winner of the AFC North, which has taken over the AFC South's role as the, why are we letting the division champion be the 4 seed, you know, role, I think gives the most favorable matchup. Obviously, not having seen the Texans make the playoffs as a wild card team, they've always been a division winner. I would love to see them win out and to see the Colts beat the Jaguars in order to move them up to the 3 seed. And I think that would be a pretty solid spot to be, even if they move up to the 2 seed, which is possible. I think a lot less likely. That would be, I think, fine to see, just to see them get to play the 7 seed in the first round. But I don't want to talk too much about which spot is best, because I don't want to talk down too much on like the Steelers and then it be the Ravens and we get like a prime Lamar Jackson performance in the playoffs. So,
well, I did all that rambling and never answered the question.
Oh, so yeah. Here, you should answer the question
too. To be fair, the radio station said, and it was Seth Payne. He was like, "Oh, I'd rather go to Pittsburgh." He's like, "Pittsburgh isn't a loud place to play," and his co-host was like, "Are you serious? Their fan base is rabid and they're everywhere." He's like, "Yeah, but if you get on top of them, they don't carry that energy well. It's like, okay, we're not going to win. We're just here." So he's like, you could go in there, you know, score 10 points and then kind of take the crowd out of it. In any of those other options, there is a good chance, you know, they score something, you know, their fan base is going to get right back in it. Real quick about Buffalo though. They were talking about that too. And I just can't see a scenario where some of these teams that have clinched are going to go out there and run their guys out there. So Philly has won the division. I don't know what they have left to play for. I don't know if they take this game seriously. My fantasy championship that I'm in, that we're in the same league, I'm praying that all of these teams that have monsters that I'm going against sit all their guys or play them a quarter, because they've clinched, you know, first round buys and What else do they have to play for?
I think you're sitting in a good spot if that happens. I mean, I think that, and it'd be nice to, I think last year Dylan Delgado won that league. So it'd be nice, because you would get a nice trophy for your backdrop. Nice little
fantasy. It'd go right there. It would replace the penguin for sure.
I'd ask you to show it off on the next episode after. But
100%.
I like your chances in that league. And I'm fine with any seed. Like, for me, looking at the AFC playoff picture, there's not a team in the AFC playoff picture that I'm like, "Ooh, I really don't want to see them." There's environments, and like, I'm hesitant to say that I want to be in Pittsburgh, because it's one of the environments that's definitely going to be a little colder come January 10th. And might, you know, bring that element. But even then, the Texans went into Arrowhead in pretty cold weather and pulled out a win. Granted, the Chiefs are kind of a shell of themselves right now, but obviously, to me, it's more ideal to be in a good weather spot for this team, which is why part of me thinks that the best possible outcome is to win the division. I don't want to make it about that. I feel like what happened in the 2023 baseball season is that towards the end, it became so much about like taking the division from the Rangers, that at the end of it, the Astros did that. And then when they got to the ALCS, like it just felt like being at home was a disadvantage and they would have been better off if they just didn't win the division. Now, obviously football and the Texans are a little different. They don't have a problem with playing at home, but I don't want it to be all about like, hey, this Texans team needs to win the division. As someone who has been a firm believer that their best chance at a Super Bowl run is to get the one seed. I mean, that's just kind of where I'm at, but yeah, looking at this matchup between the Texans and the Chargers, though, specifically, what do you think is the key to victory for the Texans? So for me, like, just the short of it is getting pressure on Justin Herbert. But what is your key to victory?
I don't even think it's that serious. I mean, they've been able to keep good quarterbacks in check without getting a ton of pressure, right? I think we talk about not the Mahomes game. I think they only had one sack. But they were in the backfield the entire game and absolutely wrecked that game. So to say that they have to get pressure, Well, no, you've got Kamari Lassiter. You've got Derek Stingley Jr. You got Jalen Petrie. There's a lot of talent in the secondary. Kalen Bullock. So you can, as long as he's not extending plays and it's busted, backyard football, I think you can absolutely get a lot of pressure and still do what you need to do. For me, it's just going to be about keeping CJ clean. I really think this sets up perfectly for him to show the world, hey, this team is for real. I'm for real. That thing with the Raiders at our crib, it was just a blip. No big deal. Come out, throw for, 300 yards and a couple touchdowns. That sounds like a good day at the office for me. And I think if they can keep him upright, with whatever configuration they come up with the offensive line, Texans are going to have a good day.
Yeah, and I'll preface this talking point by saying I'm not sure how Jalen Petrie would be classified going into the Pro Bowl, but he is a huge Pro Bowl snub, and I think one of the reasons is the ambiguity around how the league would – is he a safety? Is he a corner? Is there a lot of slot corners being selected to the Pro Bowl? That's a whole nother thing. But Derwin James got selected to the Pro Bowl, and I think it would be very much like Hakeem Olajuwon, David Robinson. David Robinson gets the MVP trophy. Olajuwon cooks. Obviously not as direct, but watching Jalen Petrie just absolutely be a nuisance to Justin Herbert in that secondary, and then watching CJ Stroud tear up Derwin James would be poetic for me, after the way the Pro Bowl vote came out, which obviously I have to say, like, I mean, to me personally, the Pro Bowl is it's lost a lot of its value with the fan voting and everything. One of the reasons that Petrie didn't get it is probably because even with the notoriety he's gotten from wearing his Guardian cap, and people finally knowing who he is, it wasn't enough to push him in through a fan vote. Whereas the All-Pro, I think the All-Pro team is probably where it's at to show what this Texans team has. I'd expect Derek Stingley to be first team All Pro. Kamari Lassiter, who didn't get onto the Pro Bowl team, he'd probably be second team All Pro. And there's a lot of talent in this team, and that I think will speak more to who is, the end all be all talent on in the league in general, in my opinion. But who says I can't get frustrated with Pro Bowl voting just because it's kind of a sham? I want all of the players on my team to make the Pro Bowl, especially on defense. They all deserve it. And to see them not get it is kind of frustrating. But yeah, that's for me. And I'm not going to count that towards my storybook ending. I'll do a storybook ending, but I could have very well said that's the storybook narrative. That's the underlying score of the game is how those two do relative to one another.
Real quick, before you get into the storybook and all that jazz, why do we care about who makes the Pro Bowl and who doesn't? They don't even care if they
do. It's a flag.
They don't even care. Yeah.
The linemen don't even play anymore.
There was a time when I thought that was cool and I valued it. Now I absolutely don't care. You don't want your guys to play in it because of when it is. So like,
that's what I saw someone posted. They were like, I hope Lassiter gets in as an alternate. I'm like, no, I hope Lassiter has better things to do the following week. Like that.
Yeah.
Like, if they're not going to put him in the Pro Bowl on, primary voting, like I hope he gets to decline being an alternate because he's got bigger places to be. I mean, looking at that, yeah, I'm with you, especially since they moved away. Back in the day, 2009, Matt Schaub, Pro Bowl MVP, back when it meant something. I mean, that was a big deal. You know, I recently looked at, obviously I've known in my head at some point, but I was reminded today, Matt Schaub is tied with Warren Moon for the second most yards thrown in a single game ever. And so there's your Matt Schaub propaganda from me, one of the biggest fans. Let's give our score predictions. Tom, what do you got?
So in true Texans fashion, this has got to be a one-score game. I think Vegas has a 1.5 for the Chargers. Obviously, I'm hoping, you know, they lose their butt on, you know, those bets, because I imagine a lot of people are going to take that. You know, it feels like a field goal game, that kind of thing. So if you take whichever side you take, it's probably going to be that way. Give me 27-24 Texans. And I guess if I'm going to do that, I might as well give my storybook-ish ending. 7 minutes left to go. Texans are down 24-20. They find a way to get in the end zone. I'm for Brandon's sake, Higgins catches the tutty for the lead. Maybe like a flag route to the corner. CJ dots him up. He makes a great grab, toe taps, scores. Texans go up 27-24. 5 minutes left to go. Herbert's been running for his life, you know, second half more than the first half. Will Anderson Jr. comes off the end. Herbert goes running, makes an ill-advised throw, and then we get Kamari Lasser with the pick. Texans run the ball out, win the game 27-24, and everybody's blood pressure's up, but the Texans are on to 8 in a row, and I'm looking for a new bottle of TX whiskey because I've been having a glass after every win. Shout out to TX. That flag up there came with a bottle of TX whiskey, and since I popped the bottle when we started this thing, and I'm almost done, so I'm hoping we get to finish it on the streak.
Yeah, let's hope so. For me, I'm going 20-17. It's been my safe prediction. I think it's a 3-point game. It's, you know, obviously pretty basic logic. The Texans score at least 20. The other team scores less, and that's kind of, for me, the safe bet. For the storybook ending, 17-17 with 2 minutes left, CJ Stroud gets the ball, drives the Texans down the field. The Texans at the Chargers 40 hit Dari Ogunbowale out of the backfield. He fumbles it, and then but then the Texans recover it. Full circle moment going back to SoFi Stadium. The Texans recover the ball. Actually, you know what? You know what? I want to make it a real full circle. Let me take all that back.
You're going to take Dari and age him like 10 years if he goes to that building and fumbles again.
Here's what I'll do. Instead of putting it on Dari, let's say the Texans are – it's 17-17, 2 minutes left. The Chargers have the ball, and Herbert's starting to drive. They're getting towards the end of field goal range. He hits Vidal, I think is their backup running back, out of the backfield. He fumbles it, and the Texans recover it. C.J. Stroud hits Jaden Higgins on a little 10-yard out, moves us into field goal range as time is going – away, call a timeout, and Fairbairn hits the field goal to take us home. There we go. I had to find a way to take it full circle from where we started it in SoFi Stadium to where we're ending. And then yeah, before we kind of bring this thing to a close, Brandon said, should there be a rookie bowl?
No.
And one of the points you bring up, right? Brandon says it means a bigger check for them as far as Pro Bowl voting. Isn't it kind of messed up? Imagine that, like, at your job, they said, hey, Tom, we really love what you do for us. We're going to live stream and we're going to broadcast it to our audience on Instagram. We're going to put your name up with all the other employees in your department. And whoever has the most votes gets to be a Pro Bowler and gets an extra, you know, a higher bonus. Like, can you imagine? here, let's put it up to a fan vote. Tom, are you going to get a bonus check this year? Like,
I mean,
that's how messed up it is.
But let's be clear. Like, you don't have to put me on a screen, like doing my job or anything like that. Just cut the check. I mean,
cut the check.
baseball has like the silver slugger thing and gold gloves and there are many different ways to honor, you know, all the different positions, without having a game tied to it. And they're getting check. They're getting bonuses or whatever. But, yeah.
Did Dubon get, or did the fans vote on whether or not Mauricio Dubon was, you know, a gold glove winner? As
I think the writers vote on that, which is probably
it's probably not much better. I don't always love writers being entrusted with voting for anything, but relative to like a bunch of fans who it's like Jalen Petrie certainly deserves to be paid an extra bonus. He's been the best slot in the league, but because it's a fan vote and he wasn't voted for enough, other players got that honor over him. And I just kind of like, why? He deserved it.
Well, here's the thing too. And I don't, we'll never know because we're not there. We're not privy to the information. I do believe there's a certain number of players that get selected from a team. And then they're like, okay, we got to go somewhere else. We want engagement for the league. You know what I mean? So if it's like tit for tat with two players and I'm like, oh, I'm going to get, you know, Derwin James in there or whatever versus Jalen Petrie. And that's probably going to pull that audience. Again, this is my tinfoil hat, right? Like there's nothing that Derwin James does other than name that makes him a better pick for Pro Bowl over Jalen Petrie. However, you look at the Texans with four, I don't know how many the Chargers had, but it couldn't have been that many. And that's why I think he got in.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. I don't think I don't know what they do outside of fan voting to kind of even the odds there, but it just doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't sit right with me. Like in a way, I think that they should, if they're going to do that, they should add a slot position. And instead of just doing three corners, you know, you add a slot position to be voted on so that your best slot in the league gets voted in and gets that bonus or whatever. Is there bonuses tied to all-star appearances in the MLB?
I think so. But real quick, how far have we come that James Roy went from like, get Jalen Petrie off my team to over here tooth and nail for this man's Pro Bowl slot? How far?
A check, dude. He's been the best. He's the highest paid and he deserves to be higher in terms of his pay at that position. Actually, I think that there was one team that extended their nickel, ended up outpacing Jalen Petrie by like very little, but oh well. Tom, any final thoughts
before yes.
we bring this thing to a close?
Yes. Look, this is going to be a very tough game. Like of all the games people want to call trap and this and that, I truly believe like you're going to get the best possible version of the Chargers because they still can play for their division too, where other teams are kind of in it, out of it. We talked about the Ravens and they look like they're, you know, halfway out. And, you know, that kind of changes the way strength of schedule looks. The Cowboys are out of it now. The Chargers blew them out. So this is like top meets top. And I think we're going to get a great game. And if Vegas is right, I'm not going to be upset. It's going to be one of those things where I wish they would have won. It'll be a play here, a play there that changes it. I hope they get it done, but there's still plenty of ways for them to get to where they need to go without winning this game. So I know if they lose, you know, the fan base is just going to be like, see, they stunk with the Raiders and now they stink now. And I'm just saying, don't do that. Don't be that guy. Like, look, this team has played really well, played really hard, had to go through a lot of adversity to get to where they are. And one of the most dangerous teams in football because of that defense.
Yeah. The only thing that could really hurt me about this loss is if the Texans play it close and then it comes out, or like at the same time, the Colts like pull out a win against the Jaguars, because then it's like, okay, instead of making the Colts game next week for the division, it's now for the playoffs, they have to beat the Colts. Whereas they could lock it down right now if things shake out the way that we would like to see them shake out. So, I mean, a big game. I've been talking about how unconcerned I am with the Chargers. I think there's some dynamics that have changed within the Texans over the past couple weeks that make this game more concerning. And I don't think I've never considered this game to be a non-factor. I just think the Texans, with what they have, should be able to win this game. The same way I felt about, you know, going into the Raiders game. So I think that the only way this could be disappointing, like I said, is what I said earlier, or if it's not a one score game, if the Chargers, you know, and the Chargers win. So here's to hoping the Texans can, you know, figure out their offense from last week, go into LA and have a good plan. I mean, the defense needs to show up in a big way too. I think that that's something that a lot of people would agree on. So, yeah, I am James Roy. And you can find me at James Roy NFL wherever your social media. And Tom is Third Coast Tom on Twitter and TC Tom One on Instagram. And we are the Bullpen. Thank you for joining the number one veteran run Texans podcast in the United States of America. So, yeah, as always, stay classy, Houston, and vamos Texans.
Thanks for tuning into The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
The holidays are here, and Kirkland's Home has everything you need to make this season shine. From beautiful tree decor and ornaments to cozy throws, candles, and festive accents, you'll find inspiring ways to deck every hall. Explore thoughtful holiday gifts for everyone on your list at prices that make celebrating even brighter. Come visit Kirkland's Home and discover great deals across the store as you decorate, gift, and gather. Kirkland's Home, your destination for a beautifully decorated holiday season. Come see us today.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.